This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our rock critic Ken Tucker has been at work compiling his 10 best list, and he's here to present it and play some music from it. Let's start with the title song from the CD that tops his list, Fiona Apple's Extraordinary Machine.
I certainly haven't been shopping for any new shoes, and I certainly haven't been spreading myself around. I still only travel by foot, and by foot it's a slow climb, but I'm good at being uncomfortable, so I can't stop changing all the time. I notice that my opponent is always on the go, won't go slow so's not to focus, and I notice he'll let you ride with any guide as long as they go fast from whence he came, but he's no good at being uncomfortable, so we can't stop staying exactly the same. If there was a better way to go, then it would find me. I can't help it, the road just rolls out behind me. Be kind to me or treating me mean, I'll make the most of it, I'm an extraordinary machine. I seem to you.
That's the title track from Fiona Apple's latest CD, Extraordinary Machine, and it's the CD at the top of Ken Tucker's 10 Best List. Ken, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks very much.
Why does the CD get the top place on your list?
I just think the extraordinary craftsmanship of it. I think Fiona Apple really made a remarkable album, and the saga behind it was so interesting. She made this album years ago with producer John Bryan, and her record company said it's too arty, sounds too much like an art rock record from the 60s. Go back and try and put some different beats behind it. And she worked with a hip-hop producer named Mike Elizondo. And I think the album still works as a very much a contemporary pop album. I love the way, you know, she's very much in that kind of singer-songwriter confessional mode, but at the same time, she plays off of it. She appears and tries to sound vulnerable and waif-like when actually there's a tremendous amount of fury and wit. There are songs like Red, Red, Red and Get Him Back, which Get Him Back is like a pun. When I get him back, when I get him back into my arms, or I'm going to get him back, I'm going to have my revenge upon him. The album is just filled with that kind of wordplay. It's surrounded by all this ornate instrumentation and very modern beats. I just think it's a wonderful synthesis of things, and every song on the album I just loved.
Is this a good year for women in music?
It's a really good year. I mean, I had more fun this year listening to women making all kinds of music. I don't know why. It doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know.
No sociological analysis for
No,
us?
No. I tried to think, is it the war? People want to be comforted by hearing women? No, that wasn't it.
That might be sexist.
That's right. So, you know, it's just in country music. Women, I thought, were very, very strong. People like Gretchen Wilson followed up her album Redneck Woman with another good album called All Jacked Up. A very popular Carrie Underwood, who won the American Idol, has the number one country album. But the best country music was made by women who also sort of look back on their past, and foremost among them, I thought, was Martina McBride, who made this album called Timeless, which was just a collection of her favorite old country songs. And the song I'd like to play is called Pick Me Up on Your Way Down, which is just a great old Harlan Howard song. It was a hit for Charlie Walker, who was a disc jockey in Texas in 1958. It's just a great old song, and she does a really good job on it.
Let's hear it.
Be
That's Martina McBride from her CD Timeless, which is on Ken Tucker's Top 10 of the Year. And we're reviewing the year in pop music with Ken Tucker, Fresh Air's rock critic. So, you know, country music, it of all the genres of music in America, it's country music that seems most like it's like a battleground for the culture wars with a lot of political divisions that get reflected in the songs, not in the song that we just heard, though.
Yes. In fact, one of the things on my list I wanted to do this year was to put a book on it. The best music book I read this year was by writer Chris Willman. It's called Rednecks and Bluenecks, The Politics of Country Music, and it takes as its jumping-off point the remark that Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks made in 2003, where she said from the stage, just so you know, we're ashamed of the President of the United States, that he's from Texas. And she got booed on stage. And it set up this incredible, electrifying tension within Nashville and across country radio. Dixie Chicks songs were banned. And the polar opposite of that was Toby Keith, who became this very big champion of the war in Iraq and soldiers, and had this big hit called Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. What Chris Willman did was he went down to Nashville and spent a lot of time with artists and record executives. And it's really fascinating where he finds people are very much open about where they stand. You know, Brooks and Dunn, a very popular country duo, are very staunch Republicans, did fundraisers for George W. Bush. And they love just debating points about the war and talking about things. And Willman delves into this. And one of the interesting things I thought, a point he makes, is when you often hear people say, oh, that Alec Baldwin, I wish he'd keep quiet. I hate it when celebrities talk about the politics, things like that, and actors or rock stars. And Willman says, country music stars aren't often called celebrities because so much of their public persona, no matter who they are, no matter what side they're on, is about being part of the common man, that common touch. He makes the point that a teenage girl may dream of someday meeting Britney Spears but never really expects to. He said, but you'd be hard-pressed not to find a country music fan who has not met one or two of his or her favorite country artists, because part of the idea is you when a star gives a country music concert, you stick around, you give autographs. They have fanfare down in Nashville every year where anybody can go down and meet the very biggest stars in country music. So there's a kind of connection there. And so consequently, country music stars feel much more free, I think, to express themselves in interviews when they want to, on stage, in their music, certainly going, you know, way back to Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, made their political beliefs very widely known. Johnny Cash certainly did. And Willman's book is this. Willman, I should say, full disclosure, a once and future colleague of mine at Entertainment Weekly, does a terrific job of pulling together strands. It's in no way any. It's a very kind of balanced book in the sense that he talks to very conservative Nashville row record executives, publishers, songwriters, and people who feel marginalized, like Rodney Crowell and Steve Earle, who feel like they really love country music and wish they could get played on country radio, but just aren't.
I before we get back to your top 10, just a really quick question here. Thumbs up or thumbs down on the Johnny Cash movie, Walk the Line?
I thought I love Reese Witherspoon. I think she's terrific as June Carter Cash, but there's something about the opening Folsom Prison concert scene. I think it's fantastic. I think that James Mangold, the writer-director, gives a very superficial kind of biopic treatment to what was an absolutely fascinating life, and there are many, many missed opportunities for me. I thought the acting was very good, though.
But not the singing from Joaquin Phoenix.
No, I just didn't think. I think he slipped in and out of it too much. I didn't really get that soulfulness that Johnny Cash had for me. Reese Witherspoon did it for me, but not Joaquin, I'm afraid.
My guest is Ken Tucker, Fresh Air's rock critic, and we're reviewing the year in music. You know, when we started, you talked about what a strong year this is for women, and we heard Fiona Apple and Martina McBride. Are there other examples of what a strong year this has been for women?
Yes, all across the map of pop music, everything from very big names like Mariah Carey made this very unexpected comeback, her album The Emancipation of Mimi, which got more Grammy nominations than any other album. Shakira, who had the first first top five single sung in Spanish this year, and then onto smaller acts that I thought put out terrific records that I've reviewed over the course of the year here, like the Detroit Cobras, their album called Baby. Rachel Nagy has such a terrific voice. Dressy Bessie, a terrific pop rock band. I even liked Ashley Simpson, her single Didn't Steal Your Boyfriend. I think it's a terrific pop song. But among those other smaller acts, Fiery Furnaces, which is a brother and sister duo, Matt and Eleanor Friedberger, they made an extraordinary album, a kind of concept album called Rehearsing My Choir. And what they did was they asked their 83-year-old grandmother, Olga Sarantos, to come in and talk about her life growing up in Chicago and just set those reminiscences to music. And it's a beautiful kind of surreal, swirling music around her voice. The cut we're going to play is called The Garfield L, which is the elevated train in Chicago, and it's a reminiscence of that time. And the first voice you're going to hear is Olga Sarantos, and I mention that because her voice is kind of gruff and deep, and you might think it's a man at first, but it's this old woman. And it's followed by Eleanor Friedberger also singing alongside of her.
I found a skeleton tooth in the junk drawer, and I mean to open the folding green and white door and take a late train to my lost love. Faster hammers chatter down the tracks through thumbtacks, slyly skull teeth, ticking $5 throwaway pianos past. A late train to my lost love.
Listen to those dead pianos
by Act
stuck
of Congress
in the
halls. Blew all the way to Forest Park. And this ribbon spinning in computer.
That's the Fiery Furnaces from their album Rehearsing My Choir, one of the albums on our rock critic Ken Tucker's 10 Best list for the year. Ken, hearing that, I'm really reminded of, it sounds to me like a very pop reworking of Steve Reich's Different Trains.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that. It is that kind of rhythm, that kind of pulsating rhythm to it. A lot of the tracks have that. It's a you know, very much an art record, but I think with this very original use of this woman's talking rather than conventional rock vocals.
As we've discussed on the show, Ken, you've been a rock critic, a film critic, a television critic. During your rock critic years for newspapers,
mm-hmm.
you had to go to concerts nearly every night.
Right.
Now that you're not writing as the rock critic for a newspaper and you're not obliged to go to concerts every night, have you been still going to concerts, and are there any concerts this year that you saw that were particularly interesting?
I saw a Bob Dylan show, and I went to this Bob Dylan show purely by accident. A friend had an extra ticket. I went thinking, oh, Bob Dylan, I've seen him 100 times. And it was one of the most extraordinary shows, literally, that I've ever seen. He's 63 years old. I mean, as we know, Bob Dylan's had a great year. I mean, he's put out this terrific book, Chronicles. He just announced that he's going to do a satellite radio show. He's done a lot of things this year, but he's just maintained this steady touring schedule. And I saw him at the Beacon Theater in New York, and he came out and he had this, he's very, very thin, very gaunt, and the ticket stub says, The Bob Dylan Show. And that's what it is. It's like a show. He had Merle Haggard as his opening act, and Merle Haggard comes on, he's very jovial, and plays his, you know, his big hits. And that kind of sets up something for Dylan, because everything is implied with Dylan, and what Merle Haggard implies for Dylan is, you're not going to get that from me. He comes out, and he never looks at the audience. He just looks at the band. He goes over. He never picked up a guitar the whole time. He would go over to the keyboards and kind of stab at them really fast, and the blast back power of that band was as loud as any rock band I've ever heard. It was just absolutely thrilling. I could feel the hair on the back of my neck just rise up. And he sang, I'll Be Your Baby Tonight, and he just bit off the words. He'd say, you know, shut the blinds, shut them tight. And it was as though he's about to direct a porn film, the way he said those words. It was just it was just so wonderful. And the frailness was deceptive, and he used it because he was like a marionette. His hands kind of moved around, and the way he stabbed at the keyboards. And I just thought, there's such energy and such drive. He was kind of bent over like Jim Carrey and Lemony Snicket, but there was like just this tremendous reworking constantly of familiar songs. He would puff on a harmonica and then go into Desolation Row and make it sound like Marty Robbins' El Paso, a mariachi ballad. It was just amazing. And at the end, they finished the band, and then Dylan finished Desolation Row. They put down their instruments. They come to the edge of the stage, and they stand in a line. And Dylan looks to his left at his colleagues, and he looks to his right. And then he looks out at the crowd, and he nods once. And to me, that said, we may as well have had Tommy guns in our hands. We blew you away, and we know it. And he just walked off. No encores.
Did it make you think about Dylan any differently than you did before?
It certainly made me admire his longevity. And when I thought about what I had seen in the Martin Scorsese DVD, No Direction Home, all those reminiscences, that sense that he has of himself as a self-created person, as a and that he thinks of himself as an entertainer and as much of as an artist, that he's a constantly working, he wants to be on the road, he wants to be out there and get that feedback, that kind of
and put on a show
like a real old-fashioned, you know. He compares himself to like Al Jolson rather than other rock figures. Whenever he talks about his influences, they're not really rock and roll musicians. They're people from other eras. I just think he's the most amazing singer-songwriter, rock performer of our era.
Ken, how was this year in hip-hop?
Hip-hop, I felt, was in kind of a holding pattern in the sense that the same people who had big hits last year had big hits this year. Kanye West, his album Late Registration, he had this big hit, Gold Digger, which I thought was a really fun single with Jamie Foxx doing this kind of Ray Charles impersonation. 50 Cent put out this that movie Get Rich or Die Trying, which was pretty bad, didn't do very well. 50 Cent increasingly to me is kind of like the Mike Tyson of hip hop. He's just sort of big and there and lumbering and not particularly interesting, powerful but not effective. So to me, the work that's being done is still the more interesting stuff that's being done on the fringes. Like this guy who calls himself Lyrics Born. I reviewed his album earlier this year. There's a four-letter word in the title of the album. So the name of the album is called Same Blank Different Day. The cut I'd like to play from Lyrics Born is called I'm Just Raw.
His name is Lyrics Born, and he is, as they say, wild and crazy. As a composer, arranger, and producer, he's exploring it all, from the furthest reaches of musical outer space to the most down-to-earth funk. And he sounds, well, he sounds exactly like this.
Nobody remembers those Rap City episodes from 20 years ago when you were the guest host. Past history, let it go. Get off on the medical. Pack a duffel bag with all your wrinkled clothes and paddle home. Get a little dictaphone and sit alone in the middle of the room and let it flow. Wouldn't it be better if you went and chose a new career path, like a shepherd or a flight attendant on an aircraft? You're pitiful, a polywog, tiny fishy in a smaller pond, holding Barbie dolls and leftover beads from the Mardi Gras. Acting hella hard, but that's just poppycock, cause inside you're hella soft like a Jolly Rancher lollipop. I'll give you cauliflower ears, stupid. You're weird, feeling blue on a stool somewhere, two fisting beers at a half brown, moaning like a hot cow, crying on the shoulder of some old man you met just now. I'm smarter than you, I'm harder than you, I'm better than you, I'm just raw. I'm hotter than you, more popular than you, more clever than you, and gosh darn it, people like me. I'm smarter than you.
My guest is Fresh Air's rock critic Ken Tucker. He's reviewing the year in rock music. Ken, what did the year look like in indie rock?
Well, indie rock was the kind of year where it was most clear how differently people consume music. People heard about bands in many different ways. Indie bands don't get played on big commercial rock stations. And it's like my daughter, she did not buy an album all year. She would download music from the internet. We would go on websites like pitchfork.com, which covers a lot of indie bands, to learn about what was, you know, out there and available. People watch videos on MTV2, which actually plays music music videos, and you see, get exposed to bands on television shows like The OC, and there's a show called Veronica Mars on UPN about a young teenage girl who moonlights as a detective, and this band that I'm about to play, Spoon, they just announced that they're going to play. It, no longer is it a sign of selling out to appear on a TV show. In fact, it's another way to get your music heard. So I thought among indie bands, the Death Cab for Cutie and Wolf Parade, a band from Canada, had particularly strong albums. But this Spoon album called Gimme Fiction, their fifth album, a band from Austin, Texas, I thought was just really, really terrific. The song I want to play is The Beast and Dragon Adored.
That's Spoon from their CD, Gimme Fiction, one of the CDs on Ken Tucker's 10 Best List of the Year. Ken, before we heard that, you were talking about how young people now are listening to music differently. They're not getting it from the radio so much. They're listening on iPods and downloading and listening to singles more than CDs often. Do you find that your way of finding out about new recordings or the ways in which you listen to new recordings have changed?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot more reading, a lot more surfing the internet, going, as I said before, going to websites. It's almost as if music is kind of in the air, but it's not on the radio. I mean, I listen to a lot of different kinds of radio stations. And I find pop radio stations annoying because they don't tell you the name of the band half the time. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. And so I just listen to what friends recommend to me, what my daughters recommend to me. And I've enjoyed more music this year than I have in recent years. So I think that kind of letting the music wash over you and discovering things, I think if you take that plunge, you set yourself up for a really enjoyable experience.
Well, this is that stirring time of the year when when you present your full 10 best list.
Yes.
So let's begin the dramatic reading.
Yes. Well, as I said last year, I was no longer going to do a list of just albums because of all the things we've been talking about, because they're just, you get music in so many different ways. So this is a mixture of things. Number one is The Album by Fiona Apple, Extraordinary Machine. Number two is that cut from Spoon, The Beast and Dragon Adored. Number three is Martina McBride, the song I played, Pick Me Up On Your Way Down, I thought was just wonderful. Number four is Fiery Furnaces, the entire album called Rehearsing My Choir. Number five is Kanye West's song, Gold Digger, just loved it. Number six is Chris Willman's book, Rednecks and Bluenecks, Politics and Country Music. Number seven is the Detroit Cobras album, Baby, the whole album, it's just terrific. Number eight is Lyrics Born, same blank, different day. Number nine is Bob Dylan's DVD, No Direction Home. And number 10, as far as I was concerned, the reissue of the year, this four-disc set on Rhino called One Kiss Can Lead to Another, Girl Group Sounds Lost and Found.
And should we close with a track from the girl group's reissue?
That'd be great, yes, by a woman named Dawn. Beyond that, she is unknown to pop history, as far as I can tell, and the song is called I'm Afraid They're All Talking About Me.
So this box set has girl groups who are well-known and others who are very obscure.
Most very obscure indeed, yeah, and it's a wonderful excavation of pop past. You listen to it and you think, why wasn't that a number one hit single like this song?
Well, Ken, thanks for reviewing the year in music.
Thank you.
And happy holidays.
You too.
Ken Tucker is Fresh Air's rock critic and film critic for New York Magazine.